It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to test your wits against those of the experts. You furnish the questions, and our authorities try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will give you $10 in war stamps. If the question is muffed, Lucky Strike gives you a total of a $50 war bond, plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we will have to be the sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now, light up a Lucky Strike as I present our Master of Ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please is a completely unrehearsed and spontaneous program, as you know. And the spontaneity tonight will be provided by our veteran trio, Oscar Levant, Franklin P. Adams, and John Kieran, plus a distinguished guest, Miss Mildred H. McAfee, president of Wellesley College and recently appointed lieutenant commander of the Women's Naval Reserve. But first, a correction. It seems I was too generous last week in the case of Miss Laura Springston's question. We asked for one example in Mother Goose where the wrongdoer meets retribution and one example where he gets away with it. It seems that the experts flopped on this, but I credited them nevertheless somehow. And to correct this error, we are sending $50 and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica to Mrs. Springston. Is that all right with you, Mr. Adams?
She'd have to specify.
Well, I think she was right and we were wrong last week.
I think she deserves it anyway.
Oh, sure. How about this? This comes from J. Hillisom of New York, and it's a question about people who might come from literature or might be real people who are associated in some way with circuses. There are three of them. Let's see if we can get two out of three. Who was the fugitive who was befriended by circus people? Mr. Levant.
That was Marilyn Miller and Sonny.
Oh, that goes a long way back.
Not as far. No, I saw it many times. I was quite
is this
a charming
in fiction?
Show.
Now, that's all right. Fiction be okay. She was befriended by circus people?
Everybody is if you run away.
And she was a fugitive. Okay. In a more recent motion picture, it seems to me, there's...
Walter Edmonds' picture.
What?
Chad Hanna's book. Chad Hanna.
Yeah, that's right.
Also
that's
the picture
true.
Version of Sonny.
And also the hero of Saboteur.
Saboteur,
the hero of Saboteur,
right.
Shielded from the police by
that's
Circus
right.
Freak. Oh, we got a lot of answers on that. Now, who painted circuses? A famous painter. I think there might be many as two of them. Painters of the 19th century who were famous for painting circus characters.
Is that the ballet painter?
Who was that?
Mr. Kieran knows that one.
There you go.
That's right.
But he wasn't
he
famous
was not. He was
circuses.
The ballet painter. He yeah. was not the circus painter.
No.
Rosa Bonheur painted a lot of animals.
Horses, yes. That's the next thing to a circus, but I don't think she painted circuses.
You
no, there were two famous
I know
French
a burlesque
painters.
Painter. He paints strip teasers and all that.
Yeah, well,
is
that's
that a circus?
That's the next door to a circus. Toulouse-Lautrec,
right.
Who was one man, Mr. Adams. You look a little startled. And a French painter named Seurat. Both were famous for their paintings of circus life.
Toulouse-Lautrec was deformed physically, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a hunchback.
That's right.
Had great genius, Toulouse-Lautrec. Who got his girl to do his work for him in the circus? Oh, well, this might come out of popular folklore. Got his girl to work for him, Mr. Adams.
Man on the flying trapeze.
That's the one. How'd you know that, Mr. Adams? Very good. She does all the work while he takes, how does it go? While he takes
he
his ease.
He takes his ease.
And that's what's become of my love. Very good. We got two out of three on that. That passes us on to a question from Bertha Wilcox of Southbridge, Massachusetts. Now, Miss McAfee and gentlemen, imagine that you had a daughter in each of these colleges. What college would be most likely to furnish her with escorts? I think maybe an escort would be a
unfair
little better.
Competition, I think.
You think so? Well, now you listen to the colleges, Miss McAfee, and see. Suppose the daughter were at Bryn Mawr. What college would furnish her with the next with an escort, do you think, Mr. Levant?
University of Pennsylvania.
Will that be the nearest?
Well, I only got as far as Robin Hood Dell.
It's a long walk back from Bryn Mawr to the University
Swarthmore.
Of Pennsylvania.
Haverford.
Haverford? Swarthmore?
I don't think they let the gentlemen go out at Haverford.
What a job the dean must have. Bryn Mawr, perhaps? No, Bryn Mawr is a girls' college, of course. How about Smith? Suppose you had a
Amherst.
Daughter at Smith. Miss McAfee?
Amherst.
Yes, Amherst is right. Don't forget to raise your hand just as if you were a student back in class. How about Michigan? Who would furnish the escort in the case of Michigan? Miss McAfee.
Michigan.
Michigan, yes. Why would that be the case? Let's clear
proximity.
That. Yes.
It's a co-ed school.
Yes. We want to make clear that it's a co-ed school, Miss McAfee. Yeah.
How about Willow Run?
Well, what makes Willow Run?
Well, that's close.
Yes, fairly close. Detroit. We got 3 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Mrs. C.D. Hiredale of West Lafayette, Indiana? This is a very simple musical question, Miss McAfee and gentlemen. To whom or to what is each of these slumber songs addressed? There are going to be 3 of them. We have to get 2 out of 3. Mr. Cullen, let's have the first. That's a band.
Stravinsky. L'Oiseau, you don't want it in French. The Firebird.
Well, let's have it in French.
L'Oiseau de F-E-U.
Mr. Levant, I still want it in French. Yes, it's from the Firebird, and what's that particular passage called?
Very beautiful. It's the Berceuse, the lullaby.
The Berceuse. And to whom is the slumber song, that particular one, addressed? In,
to whom?
In, yes.
It's a ballet, and I can't afford ballets.
Remember the character in the
Firebird
Suite?
Prince Kutschai. There's a lot. The dance there. That's the third part. But afterwards, there's a lullaby and a big finish.
Yeah, well, it's to whom is this...
Princess.
The princess. Yes, sure. That's what I wanted to get out of you and did finally. Thank you very much. That's fine. That's 100%. Now the next one. Go ahead, Mr. Carter.
Let me sing it, will you?
Go ahead, Mr. In French.
A woman is a sometimes thing.
Right.
A woman is a sometime thing. Oh, a woman is a sometime thing. Oh, a woman is a sometime thing.
Yeah, that's a swing-a-roo, Mr. Levant. Very good.
That's from Porgy.
That's from Porgy. Who sings it to whom?
Is that Ruby?
No, what? I haven't seen Porgy in
better. LZ. I don't know. I get the names of the cast mixed up with the characters in the show lately. That's the little boy's wife. The fellow gets killed in the storm in the second act. Jake's wife.
Well, isn't it Jake that does the singing?
Jake takes it over. The kid won't sleep, yeah. And then he sings it a song moralizing about the inconstancy of women.
Yeah.
That's the song.
All right. Okay. That's perfect. What would you give him on that recitation, Miss McAfee?
$2.
I'd give him all the life. I bet his children never close an eye.
And now the third and last of these slumber songs. It's a very familiar melody. But does anybody know this besides Mr. Levant? Mr. Adams, that come back
to you? Never heard of it.
Oh, yes. Mr. Levant.
The Lullaby of Broadway.
Yes, and the song is addressed to?
By a very good friend of mine, Harry Warren.
And whom is he talking to?
The Lullaby of Broadway.
He's talking to Broadway. Okay, I put it in your mouth. Very good. That gives us 3 out of 3. Mr. Levant doing all the work, I must say. And how about this one from Winston J. McCracken? Of Houston, Texas. What are the occupations of people if they receive their training at these institutions? Now, the first person trained at Flower did graduate work at Rush and is on the staff of the Mellon Institute. What's his occupation, Miss McAfee?
Medicine.
Medicine, yes. Flower and Rush are what? What kind of school?
Medical school.
And what is the Mellon Institute?
Medical research.
Particularly specializing in what kind of studies? Do you know what the field is of the Mellon Institute?
I visited it, but I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Well, baby food. Mellon baby food.
No.
Always talking shop.
What Mr. Adams is referring to is the fact that Mr. Levant has just become a father, to his great surprise, just last week. Again, I may say. The Mellon Institute studies fatigue and sleep, I understand.
I just got out of there.
Out of which one of those? How about somebody who trained at Eton, Oxford, and Sandhurst? What occupation would that be, Mr. Kieran?
A soldier.
Yes. What is Sandhurst?
Sandhurst is the English West Point.
Yes, equivalent to our West Point.
I think Winston Churchill went through those 3.
I think he did, yes. A great many of the upper officers of the British Army would have gone through Eton, Oxford, and Sandhurst. Now, how about someone who trained at Williams, did advanced work at Sheffield, and is attached to the staff at Drexel? Well, what would that be, Miss McAfee?
Engineering.
Engineering, yes, that's exactly right. Thank you, Miss McAfee, and that gives us 3 out of 3, and I believe a perfect record so far. How about this one from J.W. Patterson of Decatur, Illinois? What caused the death of the following characters? First character is a little fairy dancer. What caused the death of a little fairy dancer? It's from an old fairy tale. Has it come back to you?
I don't know any fairies.
Don't know any fairy dancers?
Could it this be one, Ariel?
Pardon?
Could it be Ariel? Didn't Ariel get killed or something?
No, it's from the little tin soldier. He was a little tin soldier, one little leg had he, and she was a little fairy dancer, bright as bright could be. And what happened to them? Remember the story? Then came a hand that swept them into a furnace wide, potted in life, in dying, they are side by side.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. A fellow named Weatherby. Don't you care for it?
No, never heard of it.
Well, they died by burning. Now, I think the Little Tin Soldier originally is a story by Hans Christian Andersen, but I'm not sure of that. How about Little Tom Tit? What caused the death of little Tom Tit? Mr. Kieran?
Great sorrow. He dove into the wave, crying Tit Willow.
Yes.
Nonsense. Suicide.
Well.
And an echo arose from the suicide's grave.
Yes, but what actually caused his death, physically speaking, from the point of view of physiology, Mr. Adams?
Sounds like drowning.
Drowning, Miss Mack.
But I don't think it's good publicity for the waves.
Well, you're awfully careful about your this new order to which you belong, Miss McAfee, and quite right. How about this one? By the way, how did the term wave come to be attached to your group? How did we get the term waves? We've all seen it in the papers. Miss McAfee, could you help us out?
Mr. Cannon knows.
Why, yes.
Do you know,
Mr. Cannon? They wanted to have something that would rival the wax, and so they made it woman's auxiliary.
You mean surpass, don't you, Miss Cannon?
So that the W-A-V-E-S would come out.
That's the way you spell waves.
Yeah. Kieran is very good at spelling.
It means women appointed for volunteer emergency service.
Right. That's right.
Oh,
definitely not
meaning.
Auxiliary.
That's right. They are not auxiliary. I'm sorry.
That's right.
You'd better wait for the expert, Mr. Kieran, to speak. Well, that is the first explanation I had heard of how that came about.
Why don't you
read the papers?
I'd rather listen to Miss McAfee. It's easier. Tell me, Miss McAfee, did they work this out after getting the word waves, or did they get the word waves from these words that you just told?
Well, my impression is that it's the classification of the regular Naval Reserve, WVS.
Yeah.
And that then when out of WVS, it was important to make a pronounceable word.
Yes, that's very
the
true.
Others were put in order to make a good...
Very logical
no.
indeed.
It's
yes.
feminine for
that
wave.
Up. That's very good.
It's all feminine right. for wave. That's
yes.
And a very good word it is. Now, how about the death of the character Samuel Hall? What caused that? Samuel Hall. Ever hear of Samuel Hall, Mr. Adams?
Samuel Hall, I forget, but the refrain is something about his eyes which shouldn't be said on the air.
Of course not. But how did he die, do you remember?
Laughing.
No. He died by hanging. Up the gallows I must go, I must go. Up the gallows I must go with my friends all down below saying, Sam, we told you so. And then comes in that refrain that you were mentioning.
That's right. An ocular
right.
refrain.
Yes, that gives us 2 out of 3. All right. Now, here's Mr. Basil Rysdale pinch hitting for Mr. Cross, who points out that procrastination, the thief of time, is also robbing many people of smoking enjoyment.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you've been intending to try Lucky's, but then you keep putting it off. If so, you may be missing something. Or make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Better tobacco gives you more mildness, better taste, a more enjoyable cigarette all around. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Let me repeat. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Those 5 brief words sum up the exciting story of many years of competition at tobacco auctions down south. On those open markets, as you know, each basket of leaf is knocked down to the highest bidder. The better the tobacco, the higher the price. And remember, at these sales, year after year, in market after market, the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, milder tobacco. the kind that gives you the most smoking enjoyment. In short, Lucky Strike tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, just putting two and two together, don't these facts call for action now?
Timely is the word for them, Mr. Risedale, and you said your say in just 60 seconds. By the way, Lucky Strike should credit Mr. Patterson of Decatur with a $50 war bond and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica for that question that we mucked just a minute or so ago. Now, here is a question from John W. Carter of Los Angeles, California. Here are the peacetime accomplishments of men who are now prominent in the war effort. Who are they, and what are they doing? Now, the first one in the time of peace was a flyer for scientific expeditions. He's now prominent in the war effort. What's he doing, and who is he? Mr. Levant?
Would that be Bernd Balchen?
That's exactly right, Bernd Balchen.
I can tell you a lot about him. He was one of the earliest, naturally. He flew with Admiral Byrd across Europe and down the South Pole.
What's he been in
he
the
He just made these rescues in Greenland, two of them.
Yes.
With another pilot. Very wonderful.
Remarkable rescue in Greenland. Pilot stranded there. Very good. Now, here's one who in peacetime salvaged a sunken submarine. What's he doing now? He did more than that. He's a man of very varied accomplishments, Mr. Levant.
Captain Ellsberg.
Captain Ellsberg is exactly right, yes.
He's in Africa. He restored a port that was destroyed by the Italians before the British gained it, and it was supposed to be beyond redemption.
Yes, it was a dry dock that had sunk, and he raised it and fixed it up again in Massawa, somewhere in Africa. Very good. Now, how about this one? In peacetime, this person built the Bonneville Dam. What's he doing now?
That's easy.
Mr. Levant, you seem
Henry
to be the only
Kaiser,
one of these papers.
A hot man in Washington now.
Yes, Henry J. Kaiser. What's he doing now?
He's trying to get so that he could build 100 of the 70-ton transport planes for cargo to replace the ships that are being sunk by submarines. Later on, 500, and they want him to do 200 tons.
Yeah.
I know nothing. I read this and memorize it from Time magazine.
That's a beautiful plug. All right. How about this one from Elsie Church of Forest Hills, New York? It's a literary question, gentlemen, a rather nice one. Name the famous book that begins with these words. I'll give you three different beginnings, three different books. Here's the first opening. While the present century was in its teens, and on one sunshiny morning in June, there drove up to the great iron gate of Miss Pinkerton's Academy for Young Ladies on Chiswick Mall a large family coach. Mr. Kieran.
Vanity Fair by William Makepeace Thackeray.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Very famous opening of a very great novel. We don't begin novels that way these days, Mr. Kieran, do we? In that leisurely manner?
Rebecca opened a little that way.
A little that way?
You didn't read it, but you reviewed it.
No. Well, sometimes that's the way to get most enjoyment out of a book, Mr. LeBron. Here's another famous opening. At least I hope it's famous. In 1815... Monsieur Charles-François Bienvenu Miguel was Bishop of D. Miss McAfee?
Oh, I was going to say Tale of Two Cities. That doesn't sound right now.
No, you're just a little off, Mr. Adams.
Probably Les Miserables.
Yes, Les Miserables is correct.
It had something to do with France, I could tell.
That's right. It's very
no
true.
Kidding,
I think we have to call that wrong because you were just a little too impetuous, Miss McAfee. Now, here's another opening. An author ought to consider himself not as a gentleman who gives a private eleemosynary treat, but rather as one who keeps a public ordinary at which all persons are welcome for their money.
It sounds like Mom, but I wouldn't guess it.
No, it's further back than that.
Mm-hmm.
There's an 18th century swing to the prose.
Pardon?
No, it was written by an Englishman.
By Lawrence Stern?
No, but in the same century, Mr. Adams.
Swift?
No, go ahead.
Addison?
Go ahead. Keep
Johnson?
Going. Say, you're pretty good.
That's a good team I got there.
Very good. All you need is an outfielder.
Johnson was good. He was quite a pitcher.
Well, the answer is Tom Jones, Fielding's famous novel, Tom Jones, which begins that way, and that loses us $50 in the form of a war bond contributed by Lucky Strike and going to Miss Church together with a set of the Britannica. Now, how about this one from Frank Caroli of New York City? It's a musical question again, a three-part one. Identify each of these passages for the cornet or trumpet. We have a trumpeter here who's going to play three passages for us, see if we can get the compositions from which they come. Let's have the first. Thank you. That could go on.
I can't catch my breath, and very well played.
Got any
idea? Well, you
got
to have a bottle of pop and a girl when you hear that in some band. I don't know what it is.
Well, we've got the girl, but we haven't got the pop. What is it?
I have no idea. I've heard it, but I don't know.
Mr. Adams?
No idea.
I'd love one of those guesses from you, Mr. Adams. Well, it's apparently a very famous composition whose author, I don't know, composer, I don't know, called Carnival of Venice.
Oh, yeah.
With variations.
With variations, yes. Variations by our trumpet. Oh, it was only the variations that you recognized, Mr. Adams. Well, that gives us one wrong. Let's have a second.
I don't like to say it. I got hot lips.
That's right. Hot lips. Very good. Well, that leads us on to the third and last of these. Mr. Adams.
That's the Washington Post.
Very good, Mr. Adams. And who wrote it?
J.P. Susan.
Perfect. That's very good. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Thank you, gentlemen. How about this one from Beatrice Steiner of New York City? Well, here is a question that will be of particular interest to first aiders. Suppose you come upon the scene of an accident where you discover 3 victims. One is in a state of what we might call red unconsciousness. One is in a state of white unconsciousness. And one, to make it thoroughly patriotic, is in a state of blue unconsciousness. What would you do for each? Is the question clear?
The question is clear, and we had it last night at first aid, and the first thing is send for a physician.
Yes, Mr. Adams. But suppose...
Red unconsciousness might come from sunstroke.
It might come from sunstroke, yes. And what would you do if you saw a person whose face was all flushed and he looked red as a lobster? What would you do for him? Come, come, Mr. Adams. We have no time. This is getting to be a serious case.
I'd say, what's cooking?
I know... Mr. Adams is practically the head of his class up at the Westport First Aid crowd. Mr. Kieran?
If they were red, I'd loosen his coat collar and fan him and apply a little coolness. And if he was white, I'd do the same and apply a little warmth. And if he was blue, I'd call for a pulmotor.
Yes, that would be very sensible. Matter of fact, very good. Have you taken any first aid?
No. I thought it all up myself.
Well, that's a fine advertisement for Mr. Adams' first aid class. Yes, if the person were all flushed and red, Mr. Adams, would you give him stimulants? Would you force whiskey down
his throat? Certainly not. On the contrary.
No, on the contrary. But if he were white, very pale, you would give him stimulants, yes.
Aromatic spirit.
that's a nice thing to call it.
But nothing to swallow, because he might have trouble with his throat.
Very good. And if the face were all blue, you'd give him artificial respiration, as Mr. Kieran reminded us, and you would apply... What else to him?
Pax.
What kind? Hot or cold?
That's up to you. What kind of dough?
Warm. Keep him warm and reclining.
That's right. And then, as Mr. Adams told us, you would send for a doctor after having done all that. Now, how about this one from Jacqueline Dyrus of Los Angeles? Each of these ladies, some are real and some come from literature, loved or was loved by a sailor. I'll give you her first name and what was his first name. The first lady is... Emma. What sailor loved Emma? Mr. Kieran.
Lord Nelson.
Yes. His first name being? What was his first name?
Horatio.
Horatio, yes. Exactly. And who was Emma?
Emma Hamilton.
Yes.
Lady Hamilton.
Now, here is a lady named Glumdalclitch. Glumdalclitch. She was very fond
of... Did somebody love her?
Well...
Sure, he wanted her to be Mrs. Something Else.
Any ideas, Miss McAvano? It's
not
a hard
at all.
Name to love.
I don't know anything about the love affairs of the sailors.
Is that Murder Incorporated?
No. Glumdalclitch, Mr. Kieran, I think this might come back to you.
It sounds like
a fairy tale.
Yes.
Go ahead.
One of Grimm's fairy tales.
No. One of Swift's fairy tales, if you want to call it that.
Gulliver?
Gulliver is right, yes. Glumdalclitch was a Brobdingnagian, or rather Brobdingnagianess. She was 9 years old and not above about 40 feet high, and she got very fond of Lemuel Gulliver.
Yeah, I'd grow him, I hear.
Because as is... I think because it was the case in many similar situations, she could put him in her pocket. Now, how about Mercedes? Mercedes.
Who loved Mercedes?
Yes. What sailor did, Mr. Kieran?
The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yes, Count of Monte Cristo. A sailor who loved Mercedes in the book of that name. Pardon?
Mercedes.
Mercedes? How do you say it?
Mercedes.
Mercedes. I beg your pardon. And I beg the pardon of Miss Mercedes, too. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, in a minute, we'll go on to the next question. But first, Mr. Rysdale, whose own hobby is sailing, says that old-time skippers have something in common with tobacco experts.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the real saltwater skipper spends his life in and around boats. So, of course, he can give you some mighty good tips on sailing. And by the same token, independent tobacco experts who spend their lives buying, selling, and handling the leaf are your good friends when it comes to choosing a cigarette of fine tobacco. For in markets all over the South, independent buyers, auctioneers, and warehousemen see just who buys what tobacco. Yes, year after year, they see the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. No wonder that with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Isn't it worth your while to profit by the experience of men whose knowledge of tobacco is their bread and butter? Remember, these experts know that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale. That took just 58 seconds. Now, how about a question from Joseph Brandon of New York? What study originally meant the following, if you take the word literally? The study of household management. What do we call that now? Miss McAfee.
Included in home economics.
Yes, well, the word economics itself doesn't it mean from the Greek household management. Get it? That's quite right, Miss McAfee. Now, how about a study that originally meant the measurement of land? And we call it now what?
Agriculture.
No.
I didn't finish it.
all right, we'll call that right so far, Mr. Kieran.
Study of topography.
No.
What was George Washington?
Well, what is surveyor?
The measurement of land.
Surveyor.
No, geometry. It means exactly the measurement of land. Of the earth. How about to lead a boy? The study which is now called what? Originally meant to lead a boy. Miss McAfee?
Could it be pedagogy?
Pedagogy, yes, that's exactly right. And that gives us 2 out of 3, which is all that Mr. Brandon required us to get. Well, I guess that's all we'll have time for, Miss McAfee and gentlemen. Thank you, Dr. McAfee, for your noble work this evening. In a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike seems to have paid out 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and 2 $50 war bonds. And speaking of bonds, ladies and gentlemen, remember this. If Hitler wins, that's not the end of the war. It's merely the beginning of slavery. Your investment of at least 10% of your income in United States savings bonds and stamps will help to keep you an American citizen instead of a member of a labor battalion or maybe just part of a mass burial.
Best thing on the program tonight,
boy. So think it over. All right. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be with us. And as our guests, the Scripps Howard columnist, Mr. Raymond Clapper, and the distinguished director of the Office of Price Administration, Mr. Leon Henderson. Remember, those who are listening, to send your letters together with questions and the correct answers. Don't forget the correct answers. To information, please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs,